right, everyone, welcome to episode 134 of Rain Delay Radio, the trade deadline special. I'm Pat, and I am joined by Dylan. Dylan, happy trade deadline day.
Was it everything you dreamed of?
Absolutely not.
I think in some ways was for me.
In some ways, it was.
If it's for our teams, that's maybe a different question.
Yeah. Let's get into it. You and I, as NL East fans and both the biggest haters of the Mets, the Mets fire sale was on. It was fast.
Baby. What was it?
It was quick. Well, let's start with the minor deals first before we get into the big ones. They traded David Robertson to the Marlins for Marco Vargas and catcher Ronald Hernandez.
Mm-hmm. That was kind of the first cue. They're actually going to sell off these short-term guys at least, right? Because I think Robertson was a one-year deal, and he's like 37. He's pretty old, mm-hmm. It's like, okay, soft sell-off. Like, that makes sense, and you can continue from there.
So that was July 28th. Trade they made on the 29th, we're going to save. On the 31st, they traded Mark Canna to the Brewers for Justin Jarvis, a right-handed pitcher. I like the pickup of Canna for the Brewers.
He's just a good dude
that I'm glad isn't there anymore.
And he's probably like the third best hitter on the Brewers, which is like probably not a thing you want, but it's an upgrade. Right.
And then today they made three trades. First being they acquired Phil Bickford and Adam Kolarek from the Dodgers. I didn't see what they gave up in return. I think that's just cash or something like that.
It was probably just like, hey, Dodgers, we'll take these guys and, maybe we'll keep them or not because we have tons of 40-man space now because we just dropped seven people. But, I'm curious if there was anything to coming back.
And then they would trade Tommy Pham to the Diamondbacks for shortstop Jeremy Rodriguez. He's a fringe prospect, but... they get Pham out of there, and I guess the Diamondbacks needed an outfielder. It's kind of surprising to me, honestly.
Low-key, one of the funniest parts of Deadline Day today was Bob Nightingale, his use of the term fringe prospect.
Oh, yeah. Like, it was great.
He is a fringe prospect, right? You're not getting much for 2 months of time, Pham. I mean, I'm sure he's fine, But, lower-level prospect. And he was like... The Arizona Diamondbacks looking to bolster their team, it's like the language he used was so strange, like giving up fringe prospects.
Bob was on one today.
Jeremy Rodriguez. And then one of the trades we will mention in about probably 45 seconds or, a couple minutes.
Yeah, so.
involved another fringe prospect that wasn't so fringe, but shout out Bob Nightingale.
Not so trend. Yeah, so the big trades today, let's go to the first one that occurred first. Everything's bigger in Texas, guys, and this is pretty big. Max Scherzer traded to the Texas Rangers for Luis Angel Acuna.
Ronnie's
little brother. There is a lot to this Scherzer trade and what they said to him to get him to waive his no trade clause to go to Texas.
Yeah.
They apparently told them they didn't plan on spending in 2024 and would really just compete again by 2025.
Which is really, we'll get into it more, but I don't know if this was just, I saw someone speculate, maybe this was just their, method of convincing him, right? And they're not, they could still sign Otani or whatever they want to do, right? But, or are they, genuine where they're, he'll just ease into 2025 because I don't know if it's getting that much better from here. I mean, they obviously got a few dudes that we're talking about here, like Luis Angel and the other guys that we'll talk about. But it came across as a little weird. But yeah, we can.
It's really weird. Yeah. And then the other move is an old friend's returning to Houston. The Astros got Justin Verlander from the Mets for outfielders Drew Gilbert and Ryan Clifford, and they also got a lot of cash.
And both deals a buttload of cash moving from the Mets to the state of Texas. And I don't know if we've really seen cash moved on this kind of scale. I can't think of any.
Yeah, I mean, you and I both hate it. We hate the return because it's the Mets, but we like the method that they've gone
right.
about.
If here. You, if you're going to burn all this money on players, right, and you decide, well, it didn't work out, you know, sucks for us, but we'd rather maximize a long-term value out of this money we are already spending, right? Compared to like burning yep. it and then saying, oh, well, we're not going to get anything back, so we'll just shed the payroll and reason on something else. Like, let's maximize as much of this money as we can since we can. We're the Mets. We're Steve Cohen. We have this money. You know, it's not made up money. Like, let's get the best dudes we possibly can. And they got, you know, for two declining assets, they got three really good prospects. And Drew Gilbert, man, like, I was stunned when the Astros gave up that dude, because he looked like he was like a college guy that was like, I think, really interesting, like, I think really athletic, like, you know, I think he kind of had like that like energy kind of tag, like, you know, he was a fire starter, you know, he was really like a team leader type that was really athletic, but maybe had some holes to work on, and he's like really developed significantly over the last year. Like really advanced college bat, age like 23 or whatever he is, and then like to get that guy for Verlander, who's had what, under 10 starts as a Met, maybe like around 10, and then Scherzer, they get Acuna's little brother, who's he's no Acuna, but like I think he's got a good skill set. Like he's a high contact, high speed, probably good defense guy, you know.
He's the Jose Altuve of
and he's like Ronald Acuna's. There's 21 maybe, like,
yeah.
It's really impressive to see them do this, and we've only ever really seen this. We have seen this type of money move, but only in like desperate situations, like the Marlins moving Giancarlo Stanton,
right,
where it's like, please God, we need you to, we'll give you whatever money we need just to get to even. You know, because they didn't get anything back.
I think another case where we saw this was when the Red Sox sold Gonzalez and Beckett to the Dodgers. That was a lot of cash they moved to.
But it feels like in those kinds of situations, there was more desperation involved. And this was the Mets saying, like, listen, like, we will choose to eat. I mean, I think it's $100 million, like, between this year and next year, between two players.
Pretty much. They paid $100 million to get three potential top 100 prospects. And, like, the thing is, I didn't really know much about Drew Gilbert. My first reaction to this trade was, wow, this is 4D chess by the Astros, because they're getting Verlander back. They're paying significantly less than they would have paid him if they kept him in free agency. And they're giving up outfield prospects that they didn't really need. But upon further looking at Drew Gilbert, like,
he's got serious stank on him, you know? And, like, I understand, especially for the, you know, Rangers side of it, you know? I mean, even for the Astros side of it, I think the Astros one was maybe more lopsided, but I get what the two teams are doing, getting this. I mean, you're telling me that they might not be those guys still, but, like, a bite at the apple at one of the better pitchers in baseball, at least for 2 years, and then you don't have to pay him almost anything. You know, like, I think the Rangers are paying Max Scherzer half his contract next year, and the Astros are paying half his next year. You know, like, it's like, it feels like a no-brainer almost, but it's like, you know, these are really major assets coming back to the Mets, and, you know, whether they will pan out, I think, is the major question that remains, and, you know, how these pitchers will actually fare, you know, into their 40s, basically. But it's crazy conceptualizing three prospects being worth $100 million to the Mets, you know, because that is a literal price tag.
It's wild,
you know, like if Drew Gilbert doesn't pan out, you're like, oh crap, that's $40 million, you know, that we valued him as, and he wasn't worth it.
And it's gonna be interesting to see how the owners react to this at the owner meetings. Just because this is something that we've never seen teams,
you know, it's a major flex.
It's and you wonder, like, what kind of slippery slope is it going to send? How teams approach trades and how teams approach the value of long-term contracts now.
Yeah, and I think there's a couple things in my brain. Right, it validates these big contracts that are shorter, right? Because you're like, well, if money isn't, if we can get Verlander down to 2 million or like 2 years, 20 million, what do you think now? You know? Whereas if the Phillies tried to trade Turner, you'd be like,
we tried to trade Turner. It's like,
here's $200 million. So it's easier to stomach over single or 2 year increments. But also the Mets are uniquely qualified to do it, right? Because they don't actually have a ton of long-term commitments. And they had these pitchers that they, you know, they're like, hey, we will pay you a buttload right now. And it really paid off for them. This season has not paid off for them at all, right? Like, I say paid off. This is relative, right? They want to be winning a World Series right now. But this was the smart hedge, right? This was the smart, like, realistically, this is probably not going to magically all turn around, even if we improve. And I think they probably did, like, the, you know, the math here of, like, what if we trade Max Scherzer with no cash? What if we keep Max Scherzer versus what if we keep, you know, trade Max Scherzer with tons of cash? And that turned out to be the best option, you know? And that turned out to be especially that, I think, for Justin Verlander when it comes to those names. Like I said, I really like Acuna, but I think Gilbert and this dude, this second guy, Ryan Clifford, is apparently a top 100 guy.
Yeah, Clifford is a good guy that's going to shoot up, I think.
Yeah, he's kicking butt right now. And like I said, I think Gilbert might just be like, you know, top 25, 30, you know, for a lot of people. I don't know what to compare him to, you know, just like a really, really good outfielder. So they will kind of be examined under the microscope, right? Because it's going to be like, well, you're going to have to be worth it, you know, but it's really creative and
fun to see now it's going to be fun to see how the AL West race plays out because
especially since
both the front runners.
Exactly.
Yeah. Both front runners got, you know, the two best starters on the market.
Yeah.
And these two teams don't play each other until September, in which they have only three games, and that's in Texas. Yeah. So it's going to be a fun race.
If you asked me to hedge it or like pick which one, like handicap it, I'd probably give the Rangers a slight advantage because I think just having seen Max Scherzer a little bit more this year, even despite his issues, he's not been great. He's been kind of solid, but you know, maybe inconsistent is the word, especially for Max Scherzer. But like, I think I trust kind of what he's got going on a little bit, compared to Verlander, who's just not pitched a lot, and I haven't been able to see him a lot, you know.
And I also think like the depth that the Rangers have right now, which is wild that we're saying this, but the depth the Rangers have right now is better than what the Astros have because the Rangers also went out and got Jordan Montgomery.
They had Eovaldi just hit the IL while basically the deadline was heating up. And I think they're just like, you know what? Pull the trigger. We'll move some solid dudes and get another guy that can we just plug in. And Jordan Montgomery, like based on numbers, was he the best pitcher traded? Like you could make the case, like at least like as far as like right now stats, like I think most people would take Scherzer or Verlander,
or Savale.
Yes, and Savale too. But I think you know Jordan Montgomery was a really valuable dude to pick up, and there's like you know what,
yeah,
let's do it. So, I think in all three of these cases, these are teams, you know, the Rangers, Astros, and Mets. It's teams that are don't feel restricted by money or assets, which I think is a great way to exist. It's dangerous, you know, it's risky.
But that's how they, I mean, yeah, I'm but seeing it right now with the Phillies, like the money they've spent and
they're just,
it's risky, but it's fun. Like I don't think I could stomach being a small market fan, honestly.
When you just can't even fathom being a part of, you know, a deal like that, it kind of sucks, you know? So I respect all sides of this, but as a baseball enthusiast, I'm just like, wow, someone's going to win this really hard, you know?
Yeah.
Either the Mets are going to look like idiots for giving up Max Scherzer for Acuna who doesn't pan out, or maybe they look like freaking geniuses and they got rid of two pitchers they really were on the major decline for three guys that become part of their core in 2025. all both of those things are like equally viable, and that's why I'm so fascinated by it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch. So moving on from that, we now get to the Angels. Now, if you listened last week, we were speculating on Shohei Ohtani trades. So, if you've been living under a rock and you don't know what's happened with Shohei Ohtani, we're here to tell you. So, drum roll, please. Shohei Ohtani is a Los Angeles Angel.
He didn't move. Shocker.
He did not move. In fact, the Angels are all in. They made two big trades. The first one being acquiring Lucas Giolito and Reynaldo Lopez from the White Sox for Kai Bush and Edgar Cuero. And then they would acquire CJ Krohn and Randall Grichuk from the Rockies for Jake Maddon and Mason Albright. And also they got Dominic Leone from the Mets.
Like, that was like one of those ones that came in after 6 p.m. today.
That came in at 6 p.m. when we were all great deadlined out.
So, I don't know, did we consider this possibility? Did we even, like, possibly think, like, well, they keep Ohtani, but also, like, burn some, like, serious assets to try to win now? I respect it. Again, I like the aggression. It's just very shocking.
I think when we left off Sunday, we were talking about how they weren't going to decide on moving Ohtani until 24 to 48 hours before the deadline. Then they hit a hot streak in the middle of the week. And then they decided we're going in. And then they got beat up on by the Blue Jays.
Yeah.
They've burned their farm system. They don't have a farm now. They burned it for Giolito, Lopez, Krohn, and Grichuk.
And they didn't have much of one to begin with. No, so, you know, this is all relative, right? It's like the Braves when they made the move for Murphy. It's like, they gave up most of the guys they had left, but they didn't have a lot left. So, like, you understand why you do something like that. Turns out that was probably really smart. But, you know, in this case, they got two rentals, but, like, you know, the catcher had been struggling in double A, and they have a catcher already. That's kind of the spin zone of it. You know, he's probably better than that because he's a top, you know, 50, 60 prospect. But, you know, like, you get, like, hey, if we have a long-term catcher already, he's just not playing right now. Like, we really trust that guy. That's fine. Yeah. And the pitcher, you know, he's a pitcher. Like, yep. He could work out. He might not.
Pitching prospects don't usually work out.
Especially not in Anaheim. You know, they've had unique problems developing certain parts of the field. So, Giolito is a really good pitcher when he's on. It doesn't happen all. He's not an ace anymore. Or, you know, I don't know if he ever truly was. Maybe 1 year or two. But, you know, he's a very solid dude to put behind someone like Ohtani. And, you know, they have just like a really like decent rotation now. It's not like special or anything, but it's like
Shohei, Giolito, Sandoval feel like a decent
and
three guys to Canning throw out in a Detmers, wild card round.
Canning and Detmers can pitch, you know, they're not amazing, right? But like they're good enough, you know, to be and four or fives rather than twos.
They signed Heaney from the Dodgers, wasn't it?
Heaney is in...
Or was it Anderson?
Tyler Anderson, yeah. So he's around Anderson if they need innings, you know. So, yeah, I think they got... Now they have six guys that can at least eat innings, right? Two or three of which we might trust more than the others, you know, especially one.
Yeah.
And then they add Grichuk and Krohn for, you know, not too much. I mean, those are both rentals too, but not quite as, you know, pitching seemed to be a premium. I don't think really, really expected this, but, you know, like, I get it. You know, like, if you go down with the ship here, I don't see the problem with it, right? You're not, if you lose Ohtani, you're not winning. You know, Kai Bush is not getting Trout to a championship.
Yeah. You know? I think if anything, like, this might incentivize Shohei to possibly stay. It's like, hey, look, Shohei, we're in a playoff race and we made the moves to try and close this thing and truly get in. Like, here's the proof that, you know, we're serious. Will that actually work in keeping him? I don't think so. But I think the odds of Shohei staying with the Angels are a lot higher now than they were last Sunday when we were talking.
Yeah, you know, I don't know what Ohtani thinks and stuff, right? But people have had this discussion before, and it doesn't take a lot at the deadline. You don't need a splash move to energize a team. You know, I feel like I've mentioned this thing so many times because it was so intrinsically linked to the championship that I watched, but the Braves going out and getting Jock Peterson, like, and then, you know, the other outfielders that followed, they got four outfielders in 2 weeks, but Jock Peterson came like a couple weeks before the trade deadline because the Braves general manager, Anthopoulos, was like, listen, like, those guys in there are struggling, but they need a spark. We're not giving up, you know, and we want to help them, and we want to, you know, turn this thing around, because I think they were kind of just hovering at 500 forever. They pop off, you know, whether it's performance or just vibes. Sometimes those things matter, and maybe guys like Giolito, Crone, Grichuk, and Lopez, you know, that's the kind of guys that just flesh out these weak points in their roster that we've been complaining about for years. Maybe they don't, you know, but like, floor raisers are what the Angels have always needed. They just seem to run out or pick the wrong guys. If they got the right guys, they can go to the playoffs. And if not, screw it, man. Go get your pick for Ohtani, or you can try to re-sign him or whatever, but at least you said you tried.
Right. And like, that energizing thing. So I was listening to our local radio station all day, you know, listening for Deadline News. Ruben Amaro Jr. was on, and he's a guy that's both managed and been a player during deadline stuff. And he said, like, the best thing you can do for a clubhouse in the middle of a playoff push is to go get a guy, regardless of how big or small they are, because that energizes the team. And, you know, Ruben pointed out that, you know, getting Blanton back in 08 was like a huge thing that energized the 08 Phillies to their run. So it's those kind of things that really make a difference for a team. And, you know, this AL wildcard race is tight, you know, but I think the Angels, they could do it, especially if Toronto falls off.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some shakiness kind of around them. They still have an uphill battle, you know. I don't think anyone would like say, well, this changes everything, right? Like, they still have problems. Can Ohtani do this all, you know, leading himself? When is Trout coming back? Is Mickey Moniak a flash in the pan? Like, there's still lots of issues and questions. Is Giolito good? You know, because he really wasn't last year. And
no.
You know, so it's kind of like, even Reynaldo Lopez, like, Reynaldo Lopez has been, like, not good. You know, like, firmly not good. But then he comes in yesterday. Right. I saw the game they played against the Braves. He's throwing 100 miles an hour every pitch and strikes out Acuna. And it's like, you know, would it shock you if that dude's just a really good bullpen guy?
That's the kind of dude you want to get.
Yeah, just, like, get a flamethrower and hope it works out for 2 months, you know? So, again, this kind of falls. I really thought this deadline was fascinating because
it was.
The names moved maybe were not so crazy beyond the top two guys, but the methods in which people do stuff was really interesting. Either creative ways of, you know, figuring out how money works and prospects are valued, or the Angels saying, you know what, like, this, we're not, you know, going half in, you know, like, let's do what we can at least, you know, for this year and get some quality guys in the mix around Ohtani. And, you know, I hope it works out. I hope we can at least get one playoff run with Ohtani. If not, he moves on. But, you know, like I said, I respect it, even if it's like not a value play, you know?
So, moving on, before we get into some of our favorite deadline deals, let's talk about the trade that didn't happen.
everyone's favorite trade that didn't happen.
We really don't know much about what the details of it are, but Eduardo Rodriguez was traded to the Dodgers, and he chose to not waive his no-trade clause and chose to stay in Detroit, simply because his kids wanted to be closer to the East Coast. So
Eduardo Rodriguez was the guy that had the really rough, like, divorce last year, right? That was part of the reason he was out. So I understand the family thing. I get it. But, like, Is this the first time in human history that someone has picked Detroit over Los Angeles?
Oh, 100%.
Like, holy crap, dude. Like,
100%.
The way most people, the reason why the Dodgers show up on most no trade clauses is because they're like, hey, Dodgers, pay my salary, and then we got a deal. You know, like,
yeah,
you know, give me a little bump in pay, or, you know, exercise that year. A lot of no trade clauses
are simply for that leverage point.
Yeah, it's leverage. And I'm like, oh, that's why he's like threatening to refuse it. And it's like, nah, just my kids are here. It's like,
yeah,
really? It's just like, I respected it, you know, I respect doing things for family, but it's like, oh my god, dude, you could go to the Los Angeles Dodgers, who are basically a shoe-in to be in the, you know, playoffs and probably the NLCS like they do every single year, and you're staying put in Detroit. And it's just like, what? Like, maybe he thinks he's gone back to free agency, or, you know, he's pitched pretty well this year. I don't know what the situation is going to be, but, like,
it's
really, really funny.
It's really funny. So deadline deals, a lot of them happened today. We're going to go through, you know, we're each going to pick two that we liked and maybe one that we hated. I'm going to start with the one I like, and mainly because it's going to be interesting for both sides. And I think you agree with me on this one. Aaron Civale for Kyle Manzardo.
Yeah, this one, I think this was like the first big one of yesterday, right? Was there even, Scherzer? Was Scherzer yesterday?
No, Scherzer was on the 29th.
A couple days ago, yeah.
But it was the first one that we were like, okay, wow.
This is kind of crazy.
Yeah. And like, so, it's not crazy in like a big names being moved, but it's like the Rays trading a guy that's shown up in like top 30 of some prospect reports.
Right.
For Aaron Civale, who's having an incredible year, but it's like, man, what do the Rays see in this guy that we aren't seeing?
Right.
What do they not see in Mazzardo that we aren't seeing?
Exactly. That's kind of the thing, is usually the Rays on the opposite side of this, where it's like, oh my god, we know, of course they trade for Kyle Manzardo. Have you seen his numbers? And, you know, like,
right.
You almost think this is in reverse, right? Because it's like, they'll move on from the pitcher that's overperforming and then get this guy that might be struggling a little bit but has natural talent and is just really good.
They'll get these prospects with these talent, and it's like, okay, this will be interesting. And then the next year, they're in like the top 50 of prospect lists.
Yeah, I mean, this has happened over and over, and Manzardo was just, you know, like, he was just a natural hitter that was really good. He stalled out a little bit in AAA this year, but, you know, it happens. He was really aggressive, like, as far as, like, the way they moved him to the minors. He started off the year well. I think he's just had a cold month or so, right? Yeah. I mean, it just sat the numbers, yeah. But I think, generally speaking, like you said, he was my first one of my first picks in my dynasty league. Like, I was like, dude, this guy's sick. You know, he's a very trendy guy. He's got great power. He's got a great eye. At least, you know, like, it's based on the results, you know? And it's just like, wow. Like, they gave him up for Aaron Civale, you know? Like, this guy that I've said that I haven't been able to keep him and Zach Plesac separated in my brain for like 5 years.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how long they've actually been around. It's just like, they're muddled in like the same section of my brain. The only thing I know about Plesac was that he was the one that like got busted with Clevinger like partying during COVID. That's like the only thing that like separates Zach Plesac from Aaron Civale in my brain. He's obviously like stable and like, I think, has good ground ball numbers and stuff, but like, very peculiar move for the Rays to like buy. This seems to be like buying high, right, for the Rays, which is really weird for them.
Feels that way, but then it's just also like, what do they see in them? Because like, they paid all that money to Zach Eflin. They saw something that the Phillies certainly didn't see, and that other teams didn't see. And like, Eflin is clearly the number two in their rotation.
Yeah, and that worked out really well. But I think I think a lot of people in Philly were just like, man, if this guy got like a real defense and everything clicks and he stays healthy, you know, then he's a good pitcher. You know, I think he just never stayed healthy and it just never worked out, right? Mm-hmm. You know, but with Civale, it's not like I'm pretty sure his strikeout numbers and stuff are down. I mean, it's not bad numbers necessarily. It's just kind of like you know, he's a guy that he's pitching to contact and doing it well, but like, is that like a thing that
is still like, is that just lucky, or is he doing something like that the Rays identify as being like particularly valuable right now? If this was like any other team, we'd be like laughing,
right?
You know, but because it's the Rays, it's like there's like, something else at play.
There's something there.
Yeah. So you know, Savali's obviously fine. Maybe they just needed Fine and they had to overpay for Fine and they're just willing to admit that.
Well, yeah, you look at their rotation and like playoffs going in, you'd have an opener somewhere. But now, like, I don't know, seven game series, now you can run a rotation of McClanahan, Eflin, Bradley, Savali. Yeah.
And, you know, there's value in that, but I'm just like, yeah, I don't know. Maybe
it's interesting.
Maybe they thought. Or selling high on Manzardo, you know, and they didn't figure him to be an essential piece, but you know, it's easy to forget they've lost deals. You know, the Rays are not infallible. The Joe Ryan Nelson Cruz swap was not long ago and it's looking really bad, you know, and they could really
The return from the Blake Snell trade. I mean, Luis Patino just got traded for cash.
He just got dumped for nothing, and he was like a top 10 prospect, basically.
He was the top player in that trade.
And, you know, giving up guys like Jake Cronenworth, who have had pretty solid careers. And, you know, they don't hit on everything. And, you know, if I had to pick a side, I would be like, great job by the Guardians getting Manzardo. This is not going to be... Maybe we'll talk about this next, because there's another just bizarre trade that the Guardians did. But great. I think for a team that desperately needs offense, I think Manzardo is such a great guy to target for that, because I think he could just be like really stable and really good. You know, I don't think he's a mega star necessarily, but like, no. I think if you like compare like how they were viewed as prospects in their early 20s, this is kind of like the Freddie Freeman model, right? Where he doesn't like have like light tower power, but he's like an advanced hitter and is really good. And Freddie Freeman wasn't a full product at age 23, you know, like
right.
No, it was Kyle Manzardo, Freddie Freeman probably not, but like I think he can be like an advanced hitter. He can be really good, and that's a lot better than what they've had. In that mess of a lineup all year, he won't come up immediately or anything. But like, they now have a guy in their stable that at least feels like has a lot of potential. That you know, they have just been treading water in so many of these positions like that. You know. So let's mention the other thing the Guardians did, because this is like, I don't even like it. I don't know anything.
It's just
really bizarre.
it's bizarre on both sides. And really, like you could say it's like a three-team trade.
Yeah, there's some interesting things going on. So I'll mention the second half of it as well. So they traded for Manzardo, and you're like, oh, wait. So even if they wanted to play Manzardo right now, they have Josh Naylor and Josh Bell, right? And like those two, like you can say what you want about either one. Both have played left field. You don't want that. Like, they're either first base or DH, especially Josh Bell. You're probably DH, right? So what do we do? And I think this was one of the ones that struck like either at 6 or right after 6.
It was like 15 minutes after.
I was like, well, I don't even like, get how what? This happens. Anyway, I'd love to figure that out. The Guardians traded Josh Bell. So it's like, okay, great. Kyle Manzardo has a spot whenever he's ready. They traded him for Gene Segura and Khalil Watson. Gene Segura.
Now, I don't know if you saw that Segura got released.
Gene Segura, has had a dreadful season. He's a really cool guy, but he's just been trash. And they dumped him immediately. So they're basically like, well, we saved a little money in Josh Bell, but we don't have any room for Gene Segura, so he's a free agent or DFA'd or whatever.
I do hope, regardless of how trash Segura is, the Phillies bring him back to be a bench player.
I think that would be smart.
I'd love to have him back with the team.
Just stick him at the end of the bench and have him pinch hit and terrorize the Braves some more.
Yeah.
Like I said, I think, you know, age, you know, he's more probably a second baseman. They were playing at third base. It's kind of a mess. I think the Marlins did this out of, like, you know, they needed to shuffle around some spots. I get it. So Gene Sakura gets cut basically as a salary dump. And so the Guardians from this trade, from getting, you know, Josh Bell, or trading Josh Bell, who's also been bad, Khalil Watson, who is one of the most interesting players in the minors for all the wrong reasons. Have you done your research into Mr. Khalil Watson?
I have, and he pulled a gun on an umpire, if that's what I read correct.
Not totally right. I think he would be in jail if he did that. What he notably did was, like, kind of mimicked shooting a gun at an umpire.
Okay.
So, like, kind of like, you know, flipping the bird, or, like, you know, like, you know, what was that call, or FU, like,
yeah.
He kind of mimicked a gun. And,
all right.
This was in the middle of him having, like, a 50% strikeout rate in, like, rookie ball or whatever he was doing. And he... The last thing I heard about it, I think he was like a 12th pick in the draft, like, and he was like considered to be maybe a top five guy.
High pick. Yeah,
you know,
he was a high pick.
And he is just sucked so bad. Like, he just strikes out at everything. He can't. He hasn't. You know, he's just been really, really bad. But he was a top 15 pick in the draft, maybe. Something to work on there, but he is just like the definition of head case. Like, they sent him the AAA in the middle of his slump and all his antics to be like, hey, this is how you like be a professional and be like a adult. It's like, how often do you hear that? Like, he's the most like 19-20 year old I've ever heard in baseball out of a lot of 19 and 20 year olds. He's just so, you know, his number one thing is immaturity levels, you know? So just the strangest, like, amalgamation of guys moving in that deal that was just, like, brain melting a little bit, you know? Like,
yeah.
Two guys we know very well that were, like, seemingly salary. Like, Josh Bell, I guess, will play for the Marlins. Gene Sakura will not play for the Guardians. And Khalil Watson is just, like,
He's
the most dartboard of prospects. Like, he's got great talent, but sucks at baseball and is, like, emotionally stunted or something. Like, I don't know. I'm not trying to be too mean to the guy, but, like, I never heard a young prospect so, like, crapped on in the media, you know, for, like, the way he acts. It's very strange. So, I don't know who wins that. I don't know if there's any winners, but, like, oh my god, the names of all that I never would have expected.
We're all losers for having witnessed
it. I'm a winner. I enjoy it.
Well, that's fair. But then, like, the second part of that is wild too, because the Marlins then trade Garrett Cooper.
Yes, yeah, it's like
Padres.
Simultaneously, like, Ken Rosenthal got a stroke. He was like, Garrett Cooper is being traded by the Padres. And it's like, what? Like, what are you
Which
saying?
Which is wild, because the Padres just acquired G-Man Choi today.
Yeah, I think they're like, yeah, he was a lot of wires crossed. I mean, happened for all of us, I guess. What actually happened was that the Padres acquired Garrett Cooper from the Marlins and Sean Reynolds. I don't know Sean Reynolds. Or is Sean Reynolds one of the guys coming back? Or did he go to the Padres?
He's going. The only return the Marlins are getting is Ryan Weathers.
They got Ryan Weathers, who is a still pretty young pitcher. He's kind of like... I don't know how to describe Ryan Weathers, because there's not lots of guys that come up when they're like 20 years old, and it's like, that's a number five starter that eats innings. You know? Like, that's kind of what he is, you know? Just like very strange, like... Garrett Cooper's like probably more of a platoon bat. Ryan Weathers is a really weird pitcher. So, like, if you think about all these deals the Marlins did, it's just like, I think they got better, but it's like, what? it's just very That's strange. Weird. And yeah, I don't know. Like, I get what the Padres are going for here, because I don't think they had any room for Weathers left, and they did some other stuff too, but yeah, the Marlins, Kim Ng just had a very strange deadline, and
maybe
I'm certainly interesting.
Maybe it works out really, really well. You know, that's certainly possible. But because of how strange the names are,
they're about to shut out the Phillies.
Is that happening right now?
It's 1-0 in the ninth.
Is it Sandy today or someone else?
It's Sandy. Robertson's in to close it out.
Oh, baby. That's what I like to see. you know, and they're going for it, question mark. Like, I mean, like, they didn't go for it, but, like, they made specific moves to improve these gigantic holes on their roster, right? Especially at third base, where yep. they'd probably just shift someone over and then Josh Bell play first base, DH, things like that. So, yeah. So, just bizarre. Bizarre is the headliner, but interesting as well.
Yeah, definitely. One that I hate is the Paul Sewald trade.
Yeah, me too.
I don't like it.
I understand it. I don't
know what the Mariners are doing.
I understand
like,
it, but
I get it. But I hate it.
Like, one of the main reasons the Mariners were good last year and they made the playoffs last year is because their bullpen did really, really well. They won a yep. lot of close games. Paul Sewald is just really good. He's a little old. He doesn't throw that hard. But the dude's money,
yeah.
you know? And I see that what they got. So Josh Rojas is going to functionally replace Colton Wong, who they basically just kicked to the curb.
Yep.
Dominic Canzone, could be Canzoni, was basically the best hitter in the PCL. So mm-hmm. I understand what they're looking at. And Ryan Bliss, I think, is in AAA as well and had just monster numbers in AA, I think, recently. So I get what they're going for. You know, like, these guys are high performers. Maybe Josh Rojas does a little bit better than Colton Wong, even though they're kind of similar. But it's just like, it's Paul Sewald. Not only is he just really good, but like, he felt kind of core to their identity a little bit, right? Like, I don't know. Like, maybe I'm overthinking this 100%. A little bit, but like, he felt like a rallying force for them, and he's been a fairly substantial reason why they're able to win a lot of these close games and, you know, stay so tight.
Well, one of our mutual friends, Retro, who's a big Mariners fan, was talking with him about it, and like, he hates it. He thinks like, if Sewald is such a big part of the team and a big clubhouse guy that, you know, it makes no sense to move yeah. him.
And the Mariners are not having a great season, but they're like a little over. I mean, they're actually really good right now. They're like really hot.
Yeah.
So it's a confusing kind of line they're trying to play here, where they didn't seemingly add anyone of consequence for this year's team. And they didn't like sell off a lot, right? It's not like they're like tanking. They kind of mm-hmm. sold off loose parts for the most part, but the Sewald one in particular is just like, what a strange kind of gamble. You know, it'd be like, well, of the guys that we could give up, you know, this is the offer. And again, I kind of get
it's weird that
they get the guys that they wanted. They're going for like Ty France yeah. 2.0, basically. These guys are like hit like monsters in the AAA, and it's like, okay, are they actually great or not great? You know, we'll see. I don't love it. And because I, you know, like I think both of us think the Mariners should be trying to compete. You know, like, we're talking yep. about all these teams that have basically ditched the concept of a half measure. And the Mariners are doing the most half-measure stuff you can imagine, right? Where you're like, well, we're okay, but, like, you know, we got to get something, you know? And it's like, did you have to trade that guy, you know? Or did you have to take Teoscar Hernandez to the deadline? Like, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, it's weird that they moved him and not Teoscar.
At least Teoscar's going to be I don't think Sewald's going to be a free agent until next year.
No, he's under team control.
So, like I said, I just don't, you know, I don't get all of it. I get some of it, but
yeah.
I don't know. I wish they didn't go for that, but they did.
Definitely. And then, like, what's one that you hate?
Well, so actually the same thing was done by the Diamondbacks.
The Chaffin trade?
Yeah, they had Andrew Chafe. So they acquired Paul Sewald yesterday, right? The 31st. Yep. And then they trade Andrew Chafe in today.
Yeah.
And it's like, if the D-backs could trade from anywhere, it would be like, trade an outfielder. You have like so many. Or like, package them into one guy, you know? But like, their pitching is not great. And it's going to be the thing that, you know, keeps them from being really, really good. And it's the thing that's causing them to slip as it compares to the team like the Dodgers or whatever, right? And they make the Sewald acquisition. People are like, okay, like you use some of your depth and like the outfield and wherever else your hitters to get a guy. And then you just trade Andrew Chafe in for like some pitcher. And I'm not saying the dude's trash or something. I don't honestly know. But like, why make the effort to acquire Sewald for the price you did and then sell off another guy who's kind of in that same vein of really solid guy to have in the seventh inning, eighth inning, right? It's just like, I don't like that game, you know, that these middle teams are playing. It's like the Brewers Josh Hader strategy, right? But like, at least with Hader, it felt like you understood what they were getting back, kind of. Or like why, you know, they're doing what they're doing. Because of the volatility of the asset and stuff. It's just like, if you're swapping relievers that are actually valuable for you and you're just left with like a skeleton squad for a contending team, it's like, is that the best use of your resources? You know, and like best use of your time? I think the D-backs are one of the teams that could have benefited most from really smart dealing at the deadline, especially because they have so many overlapping skill sets. Like, you know, Jake McCarthy and Alec Thomas are basically just like faulty clones of Corbin Carroll.
Yeah.
You know, like you don't need three of those guys on a team.
No.
Get rid of one. You know, Alec Thomas is still going to have value to teams. Look at the Phillies. The Phillies could have really used Alec Thomas.
Don't get me started. I'm saving it for the end. I'm saving the rant for the end.
But you get what I mean. Lots of teams can use a really fast, athletic center fielder that might still be working on hitting. You know, so I just don't get why you get a reliever, be like, all right, we burned some capital on a reliever. Let's go. Let's do this thing. And then you're like, well, but not him. We don't want the best lefty in our bullpen. Don't be ridiculous.
Right.
I just don't think they're good enough to be playing games like that.
No, I don't either. Especially with the step back they've taken.
Yeah. So that one was like confounding to me. So that was one that I don't know if it was my least favorite, because like I said, I understand they probably value the guy that was coming back and he might be a regular right now, but like you're gonna have to sell me a little bit harder on why you did that, because you know, I don't love the idea of taking a minor step back when you should be really looking at this as a real year to compete.
Yeah. And then just real quick, like the final thing I liked from the deadline was actually what the Dodgers did. Bringing Kike and Joe Kelly back and getting Lance Lynn. I think Lynn is going to work out for them.
Yeah, I think I had mentioned this at some other point, but I was just in favor of whatever team got Lance Lynn, because it was just like, it felt like, I don't think he started for the Dodgers yet, right? Since they've acquired him, so it'll probably be like next couple days. But like, it just felt inevitable that the White Sox would trade him in the middle of this horrible season he's having, and then he would just figure it out. You know, like I'm so confident in that. It's not even funny. So I think he's a great guy to have, especially if you just need innings. Like, Lance Lynn will grit his teeth and grind out six innings. It won't look great sometimes. It hasn't looked great all this year, but like he'll find a way, and that's kind of what the Dodgers need a little bit, right? Just hold the fort until we get some guys that can come back, Kershaw and whoever. So yeah, I agree. I did like that. And I liked the theme of this deadline to me was like guys returning home. There's like so many guys. You know, Verlander is like the headliner of this, right? Going back to Houston. Yeah. But so many guys are going back to teams they like had either like started their careers with or had been with recently. You know, both CJ Cron and Randall Grichuk were Angels to start their careers.
Yep, they were Angels.
Jamer Candelario going back to the Cubs, you know, like funny, weird things like that, that were very funny. Yeah, and I think, you know, Kike was really poor in pretty much every aspect for the Red Sox, but one, vibes. Can't count out vibes.
Yeah.
We just talked about how important vibes are. And I think he can probably hit lefties still. He hasn't this year, but like, Kike should not be starting every day. I'm glad he got his chance to do it. He looked good maybe for a year or so, yeah. But he was way outstretched defensively and way outstretched offensively, and the Dodgers will not need to put him, you know, will not need to rely on him in that same way.
And to Boston's credit, Kike had that really good playoff run back in 2021. Yeah,
exactly. You know, it's not like it was just a failed contract or whatever.
Yeah.
But now he's maybe going to be used in a more platoon role, way more second base, maybe left field than shortstop center field, which always felt like, I understand he can play that, but should he be playing that?
Right.
And the answer was no. The Dodgers, I don't know if we... Did we get Amed Rosario? Did we podcast? I don't think we podcasted since they did that, which is just
No, they also traded Thor for Rosario, which was interesting.
one of just those trades is like, what? Like, what a strange swap. I kind of see it on both sides, but at the same time, it just like, it just makes you nauseous for each team, you know? But it makes the deadline kind of fun, so I respect it.
Oh, wow. Phillies just took a 3-1 lead. Bryce Harper, well, not Harper, Castellanos came through.
Well, the Mets won the trade.
Way to go, David Robertson. Thanks for coming up clutch for us again.
Yep.
Thanks. Cool. All right. Anyways, I love what the Dodgers did. And then I don't know if you have any final deals you want to touch on.
I think that was pretty much it. I just real quick, the Padres getting Rich Hill and G-Man Choi. I was going to ask
about Jackson Wolf. I know you liked him.
Dude, I don't know if I'm ever going to talk about this guy again, so I got to get it out. Like,
you gotta.
I saw his first start, his first major league start. He's like the 15th prospect on the Padres. He's like not a stuff guy, but he had really good numbers in the minors, right? Like good strikeouts and ratios and stuff. He comes up, he's 6'7", right? So already, like, big lefty. You know, you don't see that a ton, right? He comes in, I'm watching, this is like a random day game in Detroit. You know how many day games in Detroit's there are? And he comes up for his first start, and there's, like, the graphics on the screen. It's got the camera showing him, getting ready for his first pitch, and he, like, starts, like, squirming. Like, he kind of, like, moves his shoulders and his hips, like a lot. He's like rocking back and forth, and he throws, and I'm like, that was really freaking weird looking. Like, what was that? Like, it looked like, you know how Mike Clevenger looks like a kind of a, you know, horse, you know, like stampeding or whatever before he pitches.
Yep.
It was like that, but like this weird squirmy groovy thing going on. And then I'm like, is that just his thing? And then second pitch, camera's still on him, he does it again. And it's like, that's just what he looks like all the time. It's just the weirdest thing you'll ever see. I mean, maybe not the weirdest thing you'll ever see, right? But I think, at least for current baseball, Clevenger is his only, like, is the only one that looks like this. But it's a way weirder version of it, you know? So right. I love the concept of the, you know, Pirates trading away Rich Hill and G-Man Choi. And getting back this, you know, because they traded Rich Hill, who's, you know, a weird lefty, and then getting back this, like, super weird lefty that could be, you know, like a back-end starter. And another, I think, Estuar Suero, so it was pretty solid. Or I think he's just really young, but, you know, could be a guy in a few years. But I appreciated that trade stylistically, just because, like, you trade away the old weird guy and get back the young weird guy. Maybe he's, like, the next Rich Hill, you know. Right. That would be a great turnout for him, you know, or a great result for him. But I was just enthralled watching him, you know, strike out one over four innings or whatever it was a couple weeks back. And so I'm glad that I get to speak about this man and my new secret favorite player on the Pittsburgh Pirates. I wish Jackson Wolf all the best. I'm going to start calling him Jackson Worm from now on.
Oh, my gosh.
So.
There you go.
Yeah, so that was it.
All right. Cool. So real quick then, let's get into our winners and losers from the deadline. Start with our winners. I'm picking the Rangers. I love what they did with this deadline. They added depth to the rotation. They got bullpen pieces like Royce Chapman and Chris Stratton. I love what the Rangers did.
Yeah, I think the Rangers are a very obvious one. I'm trying to think. I'll give a mild win for the Mets and Angels because of the things I mentioned before, where it's like they both went really off the grid with their mindset here, and I think ended up better because of it. It's kind of like, you know, sunk cost and, you know, swallowing a pill, you know, like it's all these things that make you uncomfortable, right? But like they probably did the things that are best for the future of their franchises by doing the opposite things. They kind of did the things that you'd expect each other to do, right? So I like those, and I'll give a mild win for the Guardians. I didn't like, I'm not ever enthralled with anything the Guardians do. I always wish they could spend more. I always wish they were more aggressive. But they moved Rosario. Thank God. You know, that was just something that needed to happen. It just could not go on any longer. They got rid of Josh Bell. They were able to save a little bit of money on that. And maybe Khalil Watson's a guy. He's probably not a guy. But like, you know.
I mean, Cleveland loves their Watsons.
I'm not going to respond to that. And I think for right now, I really like the Manzardo pickup.
Maybe
we look like idiots. You know, maybe we're just like, we value this first AAA first baseman way too much. But I think there's a chance Savali just could be just like totally mediocre for what, 2 years, 3 years max with the Rays. As Manzardo becomes like a consistent, regular starting first baseman at, you know, for the Guardians who have needed that for so long. So I'll give them, you know, a B+. I wish they had an A, and I don't know if they've ever done anything that I've just been like, whoa, you know, amazing Guardians, but so I think I approve of what they did. But I think the Rangers, as far as like, I agree, like, just go for it, dude. You got so many good prospects.
They're going for it.
You are able to successfully warp the money around. Like, you know, DeGrom didn't work. Screw it. Go get Scherzer. You know, I like the balls. And I think if more teams acted like this, it'll be a lot more fun. And I'm always pro fun.
Absolutely. So my loser. Well, let's give the non-homer loser. Honestly, the Seattle Mariners I'm picking as the non-homer loser.
I think they would have been mine.
No, I don't. Them and the White Sox. The White Sox as well I'm picking as losers because I think you had a real opportunity to trade Dylan Cease and Tim Anderson. And, you know, maybe you asked for too much or something. But, like, especially what their owner said following the deadline that they think they have a core to win with in 2024 just makes me laugh that they think they can actually win with this.
Yes, but we also don't know what offers they were getting. So I'm going to give them like the slight benefit of the doubt because like maybe the teams weren't offering enough to trade Dylan Cease, right? Maybe they was waiting. He has a 2.3 ERA next year, then he gets a lot more back. And then Tim Anderson's been so garbage that it's like, were they getting anything, you know? Right. So I think they did pretty well outside of that, outside of the guys that they didn't trade. So, you know, I sort of see where you're coming from, but I think I would have them more toward like, I think they did okay. I think they realized they suck. Maybe things will be better next year, but maybe the assets will also just get a little bit better next year. So, I understand their mindset and agreed on the Mariners, like just too cowardly, too.
Yeah.
We're going to run this back next year and, you know, we'll see what happens. And I don't think this roster is going to work like that. I think they need real hitters. And if they don't do that in free agency, I haven't seen anything from DePoto and his crew that suggests they're going to find the right guys.
No.
And that sucks because I think we all have a soft spot for the Mariners. My two lose, I think the Mariners were up there, and these two teams were in a very similar boat, although they're in kind of different spots. The Yankees and the Orioles, I think I really did not. The Yankees were basically just totally complacent and fine where they were, which is just mind-blowing to me, like that the Yankees looked at the roster were like...
Watching the Yankee fan base meltdown right now is kind of funny. I think they made
one trade like 10 minutes after the gun.
And they're currently getting smoked by Tampa Bay, too.
Yeah, obviously. They have so many guys that are not major leaguers that are starting like every day. Just like, you guys couldn't have been the team that traded for... I mean, let me just scroll down the stupid list. Tommy Pham, you couldn't have traded for David Robertson. You couldn't have traded for... Who else on this list? Jamer Candelario. You know, like, you really couldn't, like, Garrett Cooper. You know, like, there's so many guys that it's just like, this guy probably helps the Yankees. You know, they're not supposed to be horrible. They're like, what, 5 games over .500 or whatever. They're still in the playoff race. Like, you're the Yankees, dude. Like,
act like the Yankees. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know, you don't even have to do a lot. Just, like, raise the floor of these awful spots on your roster. They're because they got, you know, sometimes guys get hurt. You know? Yeah, you guys have gotten really unlucky. That sucks. You know? But, like, don't go into the... They started Jake Bauer's leadoff today. How do you think that's going to work out? You know?
Not well.
By the way, no, Jake Bauer has not fixed himself. He's basically the same guy. You know, he's a replacement level guy. Don't start him leadoff. Anthony Rizzo has been terrible. Find someone that can give him a break. You know, things like this that I just don't understand, even as someone that doesn't want the Yankees to be successful. Right. And then the Orioles, kind of the same thing. It did get Jack Flaherty, so I'll give them the slightest bit of credit.
Congrats on having a guy that can throw innings. Not good innings, like, but he can throw innings.
I don't like Jack Flaherty. I can't wait
for Jack Flaherty to start game one of a postseason series. It's going to be hysterical.
I don't like Jack Flaherty. I think of, you know, guys that were available, I think he's one of those guys where I just wouldn't have bothered, or like, you take him for nothing and then hopefully he's going to stick around on, you know, as your fifth starter. Which, you know, is kind of what they're trying to do, but like...
Yeah.
They need pitchers
bad.
If they want to be a serious team, right? Like, they're obviously really good, but if they want to act like a serious team, they need the pitchers, because all of their guys are being worn out. Like, every single guy on their team is maxed out in innings right now, except for like Kyle Gibson. You know, they're all like, no one's ever thrown this much on their entire team because it's a bunch of like 24-year-olds, and that doesn't work. They're all going to be exhausted. We've already seen Tyler Wells get demoted because they're just like, we got to save his arm. It's like, okay, so you don't think this is going to happen with Dean Kramer and, you know, like all these other guys, Kyle Bradish. Kyle Bradish has been really good, but like
who's next that you pull up? DL Hall? Like,
yeah. Like, you know, Grayson's still got to figure things out. Like, Kyle Gibson is like just the most average pitcher in the world. Like, he can't be starting game one, game two of a playoff series if you're like the second best team in the American League. Or I guess first. Are they first place?
First place in the AL East right now.
Like, and are they the first in the American League total?
If the playoffs ended today,
they'd have a bye.
They would have a bye, and Kyle Gibson would be starting game one of the American League Division Series against either the Houston Astros or the Toronto Blue Jays.
And you're telling me the Astros, who would come in as like the 5 seed, wouldn't just beat the pants off of Kyle Gibson and Kyle Bradish? Like, I know these guys are fine, but come on, man. Like, they just need it. Even if it was, you know, like I said, someone super simple. I understand. Maybe Flaherty is that guy. I don't know.
Well, like Jordan Montgomery, you could have gotten for nothing.
Yeah, Jordan Montgomery, I think, would have been perfectly suitable for them. Lance Lynn. We're not going all in, but let's get a guy that's been there before.
Yeah.
Let's get a guy that's like, we know has done stuff. I mean, Flaherty kind of fits some of those bills, but his numbers are just so bad.
Yeah.
He's so lucky that he hasn't been just a massive train wreck the entire season. He was a massive train wreck a good chunk of the season. Now he's just kind of like a lucky train wreck. You know, he's kind of a train that's managing to stay on the tracks despite the fact that his, you know, wheels are flying off. And they paid like a real, I mean, I don't know if they paid a lot, but they paid real guys for him. So I wish, I've been really disappointed in the Orioles process for the last year. I wish they went harder in the offseason. And I wish they went harder now, because this is a real team. This is a really good team. And if they plan it out right, this could be a World Series team, you know, very soon. And that soon could have been like now.
Yeah.
But I just, you cannot convince me that pitching staff has any prayer of getting passed around, you know? So I would put them in the losers.
But my biggest loser.
Yeah.
My Take biggest loser is the Philadelphia Phillies. Did David Dombrowski fall asleep? Did he miss the trade deadline? Did he not set his alarm to wake up? You're telling me Michael Lorenzen and Rodolfo Castro are the two moves you're making when you are literally first in the wildcard standings right now with two glaring holes on the team. Number one, left field, because you can't be running Kyle Schwarber out there every day. And number two,
if the only bullpen. They traded Kyle Schwarber like I suggested last week. Anyway, go ahead.
And number two, the bullpen. And not in the fact that the bullpen is bad, but like Gregory Soto, Craig Kimbrell are all like about to hit career highs in innings. Like, these dudes are going to get tired going into September. It's an old
staff, too. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you couldn't go and fill those needs. And, like, the lineup isn't hitting. Like, I look around the league. I look at the Atlanta Braves, elite offense and pitching. I look at the Orioles. They got that youth, you know, and some sort of depth. You know, the Dodgers have skill experience. The Rangers have all this depth. Meanwhile, the Phillies are literally, how many automatic outs can we pack into one offense and still fall ass first into a playoff spot? That is literally how I feel about this team right now. You're getting shut out 1-0 to the Marlins. And like, granted, thanks David Robertson for coming up clutch for us and letting us take the lead and win. But like, good God, Trey Turner's in the 7th spot right now.
Trey Turner thing is just so brutal.
It baffles my mind. Nothing makes sense with this team. I get getting Lorenzen and running a 6-man rotation to, you know, help the arms of Nola, Wheeler, and Ranger going into the playoffs. But good God, you needed a left fielder. You needed a right-handed hitter. You needed you need this lineup to hit, man. I'm shocked. I'm shocked. This was like a very un-Dombrowski like deadline. And like Dombrowski goes on the radio and said, oh, we were only offering Bailey Falter and Noah Song out there, and no one wanted them. So, you know,
stunned.
Like, yeah, no kidding. No one wants them.
No wonder.
And like, I get it. You don't want to move the big three or Justin Crawford, but like, man, you could have made something for Teoscar happen.
Yeah, like I said, I think they could have used Duvall, just another athlete.
Duvall would have been perfect.
But yeah, these are the kind of compromising positions. You know, this isn't an indictment of the Phillies process necessarily, but Dombrowski's process dating back to every stop he's been in is that he loves the splash moves, but it's the rest where it's just like, either that's the guy, or why this, or why didn't you do that? You know, it seems like he puts all his eggs in kind of these specific baskets, and the Trey Turner one has just been so devastatingly bad. I don't think it's going to be like that forever, but it's like,
I hope not, man.
You still need to try to win right now. It doesn't really matter how good Trey Turner is. You got to try to win now, because what else do you have? Like, you got to go for it while Trey Turner and Bryce Harper aren't ancient, you know, and
I mean, God knows what Nick
Castellanos and Josh Schwarber are going to look like in a couple of years.
The window of this team is the next 3 years, essentially. Yeah, you got to win something in the next 3 years.
Real Muto has regressed heavily. You know, he's not the same.
All those innings have caught up to him that he's been catching.
And he could still be great. You know what I mean? It's still there. But, like, you know, you can't just expect 6 worse seasons out of stars every year into their 30s. You know? And the Phillies roster is kind of predicated on 3 dudes pumping out 6 war seasons, and none of them are for various reasons.
Harper, Turner,
and Real Muto, and then 2 starters where one of them is about to leave. or you know, sign for $170-200 million.
Sign for too much. Like, I don't want to give Nola that much, especially after the year he's had.
But it's like, if you don't, he's gonna get worse.
He's gonna get worse, and it's like, who do you have?
Where do you go from here?
Yeah,
like, yeah. So you got to get creative, and Dombrowski's not a creative GM.
No, he's not. And like, you know? I liked the Dombrowski hiring when it happened, because it's like, this dude's gonna get us to the World Series, which he did. And like,
he did. Yeah,
he did. And like, listen, you know, you shouldn't be disappointed about making the World Series and not winning it. Yeah, it sucks to not win it, but like, getting to the World Series is so hard in baseball. Yeah. So, but like, I want Bryce Harper to get a ring with this team. It's just wild, because like, as good as the Braves are, it still feels like, man, the NL playoffs could be wide open if we get in and everyone starts hitting.
Absolutely. As a Braves fan, you know, the Braves added Brad Hand today. They basically just, you know, they got Nicky Lopez and Brad Hand. They're just like, you know what? Let's
That's all they needed, man. Like, your team is so loaded.
I would have been fine. I would have been fine with like a back end pitcher. You know, if they were the Michael Lorenzen or Rich Hill team, I would have been like, you know,
I don't hate the Braves as much as I hate other NL. I actually have a lot of respect for the Braves.
Yeah, like, I think we both hate the Mets more than
each other. But like, I've always respected the rivalry our teams have. But goddamn, am I jealous on how you've built this team.
But also, you know, I think they're going to cruise into the playoffs. Whether they win the World Series or the NLCS, that's no guarantee, right? But like, you can lay out the things that are going to work or not work, or the scenarios of which certain guys will work or not work. Sometimes it takes a lot of luck, but like, sometimes it's putting yourself in the best position to win a couple months from now.
And it's like those little moves that fill a need. Yeah. And like, I think the Duvall would have been a little move that filled a need that team had. Right,
exactly. You know, he can do that. You know, he can go on a run. He can fill certain needs on that roster. Hopefully Christian Pache will come back, because every time Christian Pache has played for the Phillies this year, it's been really good. It's just a matter of, will he do it again, and is he actually that good?
I mean, Pache in center and Marsh in left is what I want to see at this
point.
That's
the ideal formation, but it's just kind of a mess.
Yeah.
On that roster. So, you know, yeah, I will be very curious to see how the rest of the season plays out for them. That, you know, just to close the podcast, man, the NL
wild card race is insane right now.
Is staggering. Like, there were a couple teams in there that needed to do stuff. The Padres were like, even if it's small moves, we got to do stuff. Yeah. You know, like the Cubs, the Marlins, everyone was doing something. Even the Phillies. I know they didn't do a lot, but they got Lorenzen. Yeah, like,
Lorenzen's a move.
And Rodolfo Castro can be a platoon guy. Right. Sure. Like, you have to be able to keep up with what everyone else is doing in this situation. It was really interesting to see which teams were like, you know what? Let's figure this out. Let's see what we can do. Even if it's not splashy, Jamer Candelario, Michael Lorenzen, but like, we want to make ourselves better for the next 2 months. You know, this is a sprint now.
Yeah.
So I'm very curious to see how this is going to work out.
NL playoff race is going to be fun. I think that's a great place to leave it. Dylan, thank you as always for joining me. Everyone, thank you for listening. Rain Delay Radio is produced by Lewis. Our theme music is composed by Chuck Leese. Rain Delay Radio is edited by Naeem. I'm Patrick. I was joined by Dylan. We release Rain Delay Radio every Monday, but today we're releasing it on Wednesday for our special deadline edition. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you guys on the next pod. Later.
Jackson Wolf.